Hello and welcome. Today, we're going to be asking whether the language we speak influences the way we perceive the world. So you might remember from your French or Spanish lessons at school having to learn masculine and feminine word endings. But have you ever wondered how that might change the way you view your surroundings? I'm someone who speaks only English, and I can't imagine looking at an inanimate object and thinking of it as either masculine or feminine. To discuss this some more, we're welcoming on today's episode linguistic expert Emily May.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you on. There's been a recent study, hasn't there? Can you tell our listeners a bit more about it?
Yes. In September this year, Sato Kasaponsa and Athanos Apoulos from Lancaster University conducted a study with the hypothesis that grammatical gender categories structure cognition to influence judgment and perception. In short, they wanted to see if language or languages that you speak shape your worldview. In linguistics, this is known as linguistic relativity.
So on this podcast, we always ask our guest, who cares and why should we care?
So linguistics, linguistic relativity, is a controversial topic. It can be dangerous to say that language shapes the way speakers see the world, as this leads to people claiming certain languages and their speakers are inferior or superior to others. It's important that the topic is researched to see if there's any truth in the theory and ultimately disprove misconceptions about language hierarchy. It's important to stress that yes, language might influence our worldview, but that all languages fulfil the same function.
So how does the study in Lancaster link to this theory of linguistic relativity?
The study, which was called Flexing Gender Perception, is testing whether speakers of gendered languages, in this case French, were more likely to categorise inanimate objects as being gendered. The language being examined was French, and their potential perception is a link between inanimate objects and gender.
So when you talk about categorising specific objects as having a gender, what do you mean by that?
So there's actually two concepts that this can refer to. English speakers like you and me see objects as gendered due to social connections that we subconsciously draw on, like a spanner or a makeup brush that we automatically associate with one gender or the other. This is known as conceptual gender association, whereas in languages with gendered grammar systems, they have another layer of gendering objects, which is that a word could be categorised as masculine or feminine.
Okay, so for example, a French speaker would associate a dress, say, with a woman, and they would also categorise the word for dress as masculine or feminine.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So in this study, they were looking at how gendered language would shape these subconscious gender biases and how quickly people make those biases.
Oh, wow, that sounds like it could be complicated. How do you go about measuring something like that?
So I think the best way of explaining this would be to try it out on you. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
So I'll put a picture in front of you and I want you to describe to our listeners what you can see.
Okie dokie. So Emily is showing me a picture of a tie, like a tie that you would wear with a suit.
Okay, and the next picture?
Now I'm being shown a picture of a man's face.
Okay, answering yes or no, did the object make you think of the face?
Yes, I would say so.
You just matched the conceptual gender to the face, which is exactly what we'd expect from a monolingual English speaker.
But what if I spoke French or Italian?
So linguistic relativity anticipates that a French speaker would be influenced by the grammar of their native language. Because if you were French, you would know that the word for necktie is actually feminine, and so the prediction would be that you'd consider the grammatical gender before the conceptual one, which is that men typically wear ties.
Okay, so is this what the participants of your study had to do?
Yeah, the study looked at 20 monolingual English speakers and 20 bilingual French-English speakers, where French was their first language. They had around 5 or 6 seconds to look at each picture, and sometimes the face would match the expected or conceptual gender, like in the example I gave you, but other times it wouldn't.
So you have English speakers and bilingual French and English speakers, and everybody is making these gendered associations between the pictures. What's the result of this study?
The English speakers made quicker decisions. Unlike other theorists' past studies, Lancaster made their study non-verbal so as to prevent subconscious thought processes around the gender of the words in French.
When you say the study was non-verbal, can you clarify that for me?
The study didn't require the participants to read or even label the images before them with words, which would lead them to automatically think about the word's grammatical gender. For a speaker of one of those languages, these two things are practically inseparable. As they were only required to answer yes or no to the question at the end, all the thought process involved were quick and subconscious, therefore we can be confident that all the thought processes are natural and entirely unprompted.
Okay, so there were no words involved in the study at all? Did they even know it was a language study?
Well, funnily enough, the study was conducted entirely in English, so for bilingual participants, they didn't even know that it was their French cognition that was being studied. So even if they didn't choose the grammatical gender, the fact they considered it before making the decision slowed down their response time by just over a second.
A whole second longer to decide. It doesn't sound like much at all, but I bet it makes a big difference. So how did they know who was being more decisive?
The event-related potential, so essentially the measured brain response, indicated that the bilingual people used a part of their brain associated with grammar and linguistics before answering, whereas monolinguals didn't undertake this same process.
So you can measure brainwaves to see if people use language? I had no idea that was even possible. What can all of this mean for future studies?
This study paves the way for other investigations into the impact and the importance of bilingualism. And if Wolf was right and language really does shape thought, then this opens up many avenues that can be explored, such as perceptions of time or colours, which do differ across languages.
It's so important to investigate the different ways we think and speak. I cannot wait to find out more. But that's all we have time for today. But a huge thank you to Emily for being here, and be sure to join us next time.